Welcome to the Round 11 Your Super Coach Coach podcast. This week, I'm joined by Mark, or FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
And we'll begin this week as we have done every week thus far, and that's start off by telling you guys how we did on the weekend. So, Bi Carnage hit, and we saw a lot of people expressing their displeasure on Twitter and Facebook, and it saw some pretty low scores and a lot of donuts, and we've been a bit unlucky to be hit by injuries during this period to key players like Horsley and Pendlebury and Zaharakis, but it isn't the most enjoyable way to be playing Supercoach, and I know a lot of the Supercoach public out there aren't too happy, so hopefully Virtual Sports does a better job on it next year. But for last round, I scored 1667.
Not too bad.
Not too bad, but that was actually from 19 players, so not great, not far from great. It pushed me up first time all year, Mark. Top 1,000. Woohoo!
First time, mate. Well done.
Yeah. 717th. So pretty happy. Mark, how'd you go?
Not quite as good as you, mate. I got burnt pretty hard by the late withdrawal of Zaharakis. That was quite painful for my side. I ended up, like, I'd budgeted for the buys pretty well, I think. I would have had no donuts at all if all of the players I'd selected were playing, but I had Spur not being selected up back, which causes a donut, and I had Pendlebury, Horsley, and Zaharakis donuts. So, yeah, those four donuts are pretty costly in the end, but I think I'm looking at maybe one this week and maybe a couple the week after if everything goes to plan with injuries. So somehow I scored 1,535, which is by far my worst Supercoach score ever, and I actually went up in the rankings. It's very strange times indeed.
Wow, one and two donuts for the next two rounds, Mark. I'm surprised to hear that. That's very good buy planning by you.
Well, that's if all my players can stay on the park, mate. I had I would have had it down to probably five or six total if there was no injuries, but I'm already at four.
So. Yeah, I'm looking at two to three, but I'm burning a fair few trades to get that. So I was same as you, Mark, looking at five to six, but I think last week I copped three donuts, so I was off to a bad start. So anyway,
most of our listeners must have got lots of donuts as well, because everyone's rankings seem to go down.
So we want to start off this show by just warning everyone: partial lockout this round, Mark.
Thursday night game,
and would you like to express your displeasure about a Thursday night game during the bye rounds?
I think that the fixturing is absolutely ridiculous this week. Like, I enjoy watching football all weekend, and then there's a Monday game when they have six games the weekend just gone. And then there's a Thursday game this week, so the games are way too spread out. There's no Saturday twilight game, I think, this week, which is a bit of a shame. Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed that there's a Thursday night game when, yeah, I'd like to just keep the footy to the weekend if I can.
So I bring up partial lockout because if you haven't fallen trapped to it yet, but don't actually know about it, you cannot reverse trades after partial lockout is in effect. So don't mess around with anything that you aren't too sure about. And we got a few questions asking us, will our players on the bye be locked after partial lockout? The answer is no. Only Carlton and West Coast players will be locked out. So you don't have to worry. You can still do the vice-captain loophole, put Pritis or Nat Nui or Cox or Judd as your vice-captain. You can just put one player on the bye on field. And if you want to take your vice-captain score, give that bye player the captaincy and away you go. So still works.
I think I'd definitely use that option this week if I bring Pritis in. But at the moment, looking at my team, I don't actually have any Carlton or West Coast players.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will be looking at bringing Pritis in, and he's certainly an option that we'll be discussing today. And the main topic of conversation will be the outs and who to bring in for those outs. And we'll only really be looking at those round 11 buy premiums. Perfect time to be upgrading, dodging the donuts along the way. So it's a big show. Just before we get into those upgrades, I do want to address a couple of questions that we got on Twitter and Facebook, and that was, how many trades is ideal to have after the buys for the run home? Oliver Ellison asked that on Twitter. His hashtag is Ollie_FFC. Thank you for the question. I think we had this discussion last week, Mark. We both pretty much settled on between 4 to 6 would probably be a good number to go with. But if you want any more detailed conversation, we do discuss buy strategy and how many trades to sort of use and how many trades for the run home, that sort of thing, including a bit of league discussion in last week's podcast. So feel free to go back and listen to that. It's still as relevant this week.
And I think we still hold firm to those numbers, although from discussions in the pre-show, it looks like I'm going to have 2 more trades extra than you, Marcus.
Yep. Just want to say thanks to, sorry, I forgot to mention the person that asked the question about partial lockout, Miffy Polner on Twitter. Thank you for that. So moving on to trade discussions, Mark, we're going to start in the back line. And Blair Dewsbury from Twitter has asked us, Hearn a good trade for Clark? Clark will be a big one, and he's certainly a player that I'm looking to trade out this week, and so I'm facing this decision. Which of the round 11 premiums are best to come in for Clark? Who do you like from the defenders, Mark?
Sure. Well, it's pretty smart trading, I think, to trade out Clark or someone like that this week, because you can avoid a donut and get an upgrade in the same process. Now, personally, I'm going to hold on to Clark because I have other issues that I need to deal with at the moment. But I think that Hearn would probably be my number one option this week. He's at 474, so he's not max priced, but he's close to fully priced. I think he's definitely benefiting from having Waters doing so well in the side this year, because they're not just locking down on Hearn. There's a couple of rebounders for West Coast, so it takes a bit of the attention away from him. We're also seeing less of those forward defensive tags this year, and I think that's helped with Hearn's scoring, especially his consistency. He's been really consistent this year and scoring really well. So if he can stay fit, I think that Hearn would be just about my number one back pick this week. I think with Waters, I think Waters is still suspended this week. Is that right?
No. I think he's back in. He had a 1 week because he took the early place. Oh, no. But last week was his bye. So, yeah, you're right, Mark. He's still out this week.
So in that regards, I'd probably have at Hearn as number one on the list for trade-ins from round 11 this week. What about yourself?
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there, Mark. And I would love to bring Hearn in for Clark this week. I have had Hearn, I think, in 2 of the past 4 previous years of Supercoach. So I am a fan of Hearn. But unfortunately, due to my sort of due to my trade plans over this and next week, I don't quite have the cash to do that. So I will instead be looking for a slightly cheaper player, which brings me to who I see as probably the next 2 best options, Adcock and Scott D. Thompson from North Melbourne. So Adcock is probably the one that I'm leaning toward more at the moment, Mark. He's averaging 91 for the season, and after a big game, 122 in round 10, he went head-to-head with Maston and scored had 28 disposals. His break-even's only 62, so he is set to rise. I remember last year Adcock was a big reason a lot of teams got an early rise, because he had an excellent start to the year, and is why I'm really looking at him. I think we all know Adcock has good scoring potential, but poor injury history. I think I'm willing to take a punt, especially seeing as I'm upgrading from Clark, who's not the worst player to keep in your team, that I really want someone with high scoring potential to come in. So that's why I'm leaning toward Adcock. But how do you sort of feel about his selection? Is his injury history too risky, or... He's playing in the midfield a lot, which is nice for the back line.
His injury history is pretty risky, but he has played 22 games on a couple of occasions before. He's played 21. So in that sense, it is definitely possible that he could play out the season. I think he had a full preseason this year, is that right?
Yep,
full and preseason. That's a huge advantage on someone being able to play out the years. So did average 110 back in 2007, and while I wouldn't expect him to do that again, I think a 90-plus average is well within his reach, which is a really good result from a defender. It's about 420,000, I think. So has missed 1 game this year, but has also been scoring really well. Only two scores above 100, but only a couple of low scores. So he's the sort of player that can pump out the 140s to boost his average. And yeah, I think he's a decent selection. And realistically, if you're looking for a backline selection, most of the time you should really go for value, which is why Hearn might be a bit concerning because he could pull out a 50 or so at some stage. But yeah, I think when you're looking for backline selections, you should really be looking for value. And Adcock definitely fits in that range at the moment. So yeah, it seems a pretty decent pick.
So the other alternative to him that I was looking at is Scott D. Thompson, who's averaging only 3 points less at 88 for the season. His last game was against Buddy and he got absolutely monstered, only scored 34. And
he wasn't the only one that got monstered that day.
Yeah, 162 is his break even, 430K is his price. I think, Mark, we were talking pre-show and you noted that the main problem with North Melbourne players, defenders, is although they seem to be able to score pretty well from very early on in their careers, that the scoring is quite inconsistent because they seem to share it out between the defenders that slot in there.
Sure. So for one period of the season, McMahon will go on a good run, and then Grimer, and then Thompson. And Thompson looks like he might have already had that run this year. He's got a decent scoring history. He's got a good durability history. He did miss the first couple of games of the season this year. But yeah, with 162 break even or whatever you said, you're going to be able to pick him up for under 400 in a couple of weeks if you're looking at another upgrade. So yeah, I have Adcock ahead of him personally, although look, he does seem like he should average above 80 at least anyway, whereas Adcock maybe has that higher ceiling.
I think if you're upgrading from a player like Clark, my recommendation would probably just go for broke, because you wouldn't really want to trade out Clark if you think his range is around the 80 and then Scott Thompson only manages, you know, 80, 85 to 90, that'd be a terrible result.
So if you're really going to be going for broke then, Marcus, then wouldn't you pick up Josh Drummond? He probably has a higher ceiling even than Drummond, even than Adcock, sorry. And I think he scored 130 on his last game, so has shown an ability to score quite well. 119 in his last game, so
yeah, and he's only 377K. But unfortunately, Mark, I think there's a bit of a difference between going for it and just being silly. I would class Drummond in that category, and I hate to say it to anyone that did this last week, but to all the people on Twitter and Facebook that were whinging about Alan Dydak, I mean, really, what were you expecting? His adductor has not been right for a while, and I think these are the types of players that you want to stay away from, and Drummond is one of them. So he's a no for me, even though I did look and get tempted by him, Mark. I certainly did.
Someone asked me if they should bring him in after round four, I think, earlier this year, after he'd had a couple of decent scores on his comeback. And I said, no way, his injury risk is too high. And he scored 30 on that weekend and was then injured the following week. So while Drummond does have a decent upside, it's probably too risky a pick. And if you're going to be picking up players like Drummond, you're just going to be running out of trades, I think. Would you be keeping Clark over trading in Drummond?
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. I mean, Drummond's only averaging 81 for the season too.
What do you think about Bob Murphy from the Bulldogs? Because he was All-Australian last year, has the potential to average 90-plus, and he's also under 400,000. Does he compare to the Adcock and Thompson selections?
Yeah, well, I've noted that this year that really the forward tag doesn't seem as tight as it has been in previous years. Have you found that, Mark?
It seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, but for Bob Murphy, he's getting tagged, and it seems to be affecting him still. He's one of the few that really does seem to get pinged, and I guess that's because if you look at their back line, he's clearly the most dangerous one coming out of there. And
they don't have a Gilbey anymore sitting there to sort of take some attention away from him.
And they don't really have that many danger men left in their side, really.
Yeah.
So he's an X-factor player that tends to be shut down, and that has me sort of wary. But he does have some elite scoring potential, Mark. And if I wasn't going to I think it'd be between Adcock and Murphy for me, considering I don't have the money for Hearn.
Sure. I think if Williams and Morris were definitely going to come back in the next couple of weeks, I think that would make Murphy more enticing. But I did hear rumors about Williams coming back quite soon, but I don't think that both of them are likely to be back in the Bulldogs' time playing well anytime soon.
Also looking forward to those boys coming back for Lake's sake as well, Mark. Pierce Hanley and Nathan Grimer are the last two we just want to touch on. Grimer, injury history, really poor. Hasn't played 22 games in a season before, and missed the first seven rounds because he got injured in the preseason. So is that enough to say no for you, Mark, for 400K?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I think he would, if he had been fit round one, he might have been an okay selection, but not now that he's already been injured this year.
And Pierce Hanley, your thoughts on him, Mark? A lot of people picked him up as sort of a breakout player, and he certainly has had one, but probably not to the extent that people were hoping for, averaging 88. The problem is he does tend to have the low game, as most defenders do, but his upside isn't quite as high, similar to the Newman sort of problem that defenders tend to fall into. How do you feel about his prospects?
Yeah, look, I think he's likely to score quite well for the rest of the year. If he averages 88, that'd be a pretty good result. You may as well be keeping Clark in that situation. He doesn't seem like a big enough upgrade to me. It seems like you'd probably get bigger benefit from elsewhere.
Okay. All right, so on to the midfield. And a question from Steve. His Twitter name is Bleeder80. Stanton, hold, downgrade to Pritis, or fork out the cash for Boyd or Thompson. So first we'll talk about Stanton and then we'll launch into the midfield options. Mark, I know you brought him in 3 weeks ago. How have you been dealing with it?
Do you have to remind me about that? I think I paid $640 and now he's $550. And I should have known better, really. Like, he was always going to get tagged at some stage and drop in price. But yeah, I didn't expect the Dons to lose against Melbourne and Sydney, which I think has significantly affected his scoring. Dons do have a fairly tough draw for the rest of the year, but I can't imagine that trading him is the best way, like best option here. He should average over 100 for the rest of the year. You'd think he will get away again in one or two games and score quite well. And even though he hasn't scored that well in the last 3 weeks, he's actually been playing pretty well and been running really, really hard and winning the contested ball, and his disposal's been good. It's just sort of hasn't worked out for him in the last couple of weeks, so I'd definitely be keeping Stanton.
Well, I mean, they showed that in his last three games, the main difference is that his possession count has dropped by 14, Mark, but his uncontested possession rate has dropped by 11. So the tags only affected his contested ability slightly, and it's really just that outside run that's sort of been cut off with a player following him at all times. So definitely agree with you. He'll get off the chain enough times for the remainder of the season. I think 100 is a bit tentative because you have him and because things aren't going well. I'd say 115 is definitely on the cards moving forward from here. So definitely a keep from me, unless you just really have that many trades in hand.
Yeah, which is totally unlikely. He just doesn't seem injured. So as a premium at 550, if you've had him in your team, you've done pretty well out of him. So unless he seemed injured, I wouldn't really be jumping off. Now, looking at the options that you could be bringing in the midfield, because a lot of people might not have upgraded Horsley yet, waiting for this week so that they don't cop a donut, there's plenty of options. I think Pritis stands out as probably the number one option this week because he's 460,000. His price is affected by the 24 that he got about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Has definitely the potential to average 110 to probably 115. West Coast are playing quite well. There are other West Coast mids now that can sort of take a bit of attention away from Pritis, like Selwood and
Shuey
and Marston, and there's plenty, and Gaff, and there's plenty of others out there playing quite well. So that
Kerr,
might also
we
take,
forgot about Kerr.
Well, I think he's actually probably, it's a really good point you bring up there, Marcus, because that's Kerr cops a tag every single week, which means his output hasn't been great. It's been quite low, but it's taking the attention off the other midfielders, and the other midfielders are allowed to thrive in that situation. So as long as Kerr stays fit, what are the chances of that? Pritis should do quite well, and I think you can't really go wrong at 460,000. Like, I think Thompson is the player that I'd most like to bring in this week from round 11 because Adelaide's draw and his scoring potential for the rest of the year. But the fact that Thompson's 130,000 more expensive basically means an entire trade. So to bring in Pritis, you save a whole trade in doing so. So in that regards, Pritis would be number one option for me. And I think a lot of coaches will be doing that trade this week.
Well, certainly I was looking at Scott Thompson as my final target to bring in after this round 11 when they've played their bye. And it certainly changed when Pritis' price was presented to me, 464,000. And the difference, just to illustrate, the difference of going Pritis instead of Thompson has allowed me that extra luxury trade of now I have Cloak on my bench at F8 providing cover for my whole team.
Most of our listeners will think that's pretty retarded, Marcus.
They will, but when players start getting rested, it'll come in handy. But anyway, that's just it's such a massive difference. Mark's absolutely right. It's a whole trade. If you think, you know, Adam Kennedy, some people downgrade it at 230K, you get less cash out of that going to 110K rookie. So it's an excellent option, Pritis, at his price, and I'd certainly be recommending him as my number one trade and option this week in the midfield as well.
So, say you've already got Pritis, or you do
have
extra trades.
Oh, sorry, just before
just
we move on, Mark. Yeah. Can I just... His selection numbers, you won't believe it. 16,000 people only have him at the moment, which is also an excellent stat.
I think that will be very significantly increased after this week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, say you did have Pritis, who would be your next option? I think you've said Thompson.
Yeah.
Is that a clear choice?
I think so. I think if you aren't going for the value in Pritis, because to me he's the best value option, then you'd be going the premium, the absolute ultra premium route, and that would be Scott Thompson for me.
But Thompson scored 90 against Collingwood and then 60 in his last game.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we were targeting Thompson, if you actually remember early on, was that he had a run of Sydney, Geelong, Carlton, Collingwood and Fremantle up to the bye, and we're all saying perfect time to bring him in after the bye when his price has gone down. Considering, yes, he did have a 93 and 58 in the last two rounds, move back the following 3 weeks when they had Sydney, Geelong, Carlton, which ain't too shabby opposition. He scored 119, 161 and 139. For that block of five tough weeks, he's done really well. I think... You should be, people who don't have him should be glad more than anything his 56 affected his price movement, because he would have been even more expensive than he is now. The unfortunate thing is his break even is 216, so would have loved to have a bit more time to drop in price. But if you're looking to upgrade from a round 12 player, then you're going to have to be forced to pull the trigger this week. But if it's a round 13 player and you need the extra cash, a 216 price break even is going to see him drop about 40K in price, which is a lot.
Quite significant. Yeah, so we're actually going to see Thompson be quite cheap in a couple of weeks.
Mm, 550 next week maybe, and then even lower after that if he doesn't pull a good score out. And they've got Saints North though, so Clinton Jones, he's going to be facing, I think, next round. It'd tough.
Be really interesting to see what happens there, because he definitely has copped, did cop the Crowley tag last time, which certainly affected his scoring. But when that happened, Dangerfield and Sloan just completely got off the leash and went crazy. So I think I would expect coaches to be more inclined to shut down a Sloan or a Dangerfield, who are really, really going to hurt you on the outside.
Yeah, and that's always been the sort of his fantasy value, is that he isn't that damaging as an AFL player compared to the absolute bona fide elites of the midfield in the AFL, and that's why we see him, you know, score 160 against teams and just get off the chain, getting lots of possessions. So Thompson or Boyd, I'm assuming that's an easy one. We don't have to discuss Boyd, or
Boyd's been playing really well this year and scoring really well, but just given Adelaide's draw, the fact that they're at this stage looking like they're going to finish top two, that's definitely enough to jump on Thompson.
Oh, have we even mentioned that? We haven't actually read out their draw. Saints, North, Richmond, Port, GWS, West Coast, Geelong, Essendon, Fremantle, and here's where it gets really tasty. Last three rounds for those finals league teams, you're going to be looking at Brisbane, Melbourne, Gold Coast. Absolute beauty.
That is, Sanderson said today that he's not looking to rest players, but he might reconsider that in 6 weeks' time. So, yeah, that might be something to look out for. Thompson being a little bit older might be one of the players that gets a rest, but it's not enough information to be making a decision based on that. What about have a looking at the rest, Marcus? players like Swallow. I know you've got him, and he's had two really good games in a row. Griffin, who started off the season brilliantly. Sloan coming off a 175. Rockliffe, who has shown the potential to score really high. Shuey and Redden, who's come back into form. Who would you be picking out of that group?
I think if you're looking Swallow to Shuey, that price range is 450, 540 to 570. I think you're better off going Thompson at 590. So I'm just going to discount them all at once. If you already have Thompson, I'd be looking to Boyd over all those. But if not, if you have Boyd and Thompson and you need a third option, then my man Ryan Griffin, and I've been a bit hot for him all year, so he's averaging 109. But remember, he did miss that first round. He missed it because of injury, I think. And from round five, he scored 155, 152, 123, 124, 76, and 99. Absolute bona fide elite of the competition. A great clearance player, great skills, great size. And he's so underrated. And his Supercoach selection indicates that. Out of all the players that we've discussed today, he has the lowest selection figures at 4,000. And I'd argue that he's the best midfielder in that football team.
Sure, he could definitely be the most damaging out of the ones that we've talked about. He's sort of player that I think if Doggies were still a top four side, he'd probably be averaging about 120.
Yeah.
But yeah, because they're not, he's sort of going to be stuck around probably the 110, 115 mark come the end of the season.
Yeah. So the last one, Mark, that I want to talk about is Redden at 500. Probably be inclined to go for Pritis instead, but maybe you already have Pritis. So let's talk about Redden, Mark. He started off the year pretty poorly, according to his pretty lofty standards for a young footballer. Only hit the ton once in his first six games. But the last four rounds, 118, 90, 131, and 104, and has really re-emerged as that just disposal racking up player. Poor English that he is. Rockliffe seems to have taken a bit of a dive in recent weeks, and Redden seems to be on the up. How do you feel about his prospects? A 110 potential player, Mark, surely.
Yeah, he is a 110 potential player, considering he did 102 last year, and he definitely is coming into some form. He had 15 tackles last week. I think that's probably been the biggest difference in the last 3 or 4 weeks has really been the increase in his tackle count. Rather than possessions. He definitely has the potential to average that much, but he's probably more of a dream team player than a Supercoach player. At 500,000, there's a fair bit of value there. Probably some better options out there, but yeah, given the fact that Brisbane aren't sort of setting the world on fire, I'd probably steer clear personally, but it does present a bit of value at 500.
Excellent. All right, on to the rocks, Mark. We've got a question here from Twitter. From Jester5, his Twitter hashtag is 5Jester. Best options for Sanderlands, who, of course, went down with another turf toe on the other foot, Mark.
That's just insane. Can't say that it wasn't totally unpredictable, though, that he would go down with a significant injury again. And it's a real shame because Sanderlands is an absolutely dominant player, and I really like to see him out on the field because he can just sort of change games and he should be a Supercoach lock at the moment, but because of his injuries, he's not, which is quite sad, disappointing. We're only going to talk about round 11 players here, so that does limit the options a little bit. We will maybe have a look at the round 12 players next week if you're willing to wait for that. Paddy Ryder, Cox, Naitanui, and Jacobs. I think Cox is about 560, Naitanui is 515, and Jacobs is about 460. Yep. So quite significant price differences there. Cox seemed to play really, really well when Naitanui wasn't in the side. I think he averaged, like, it was only a couple of weeks, but he scored
141
like
141 each game.
Yeah, which is insane, and that's what you'd expect from Cox because he does look like he's in some really, really good form. But with Naitanui in the side, it looks like they're trying to save him. They're trying to keep him at full forward a lot of the time. And let Naitanui do most of the ruck work around the ground, especially with Kennedy not in the side. They do need that big body up forward, and Naitanui hasn't really developed into that marking forward quite yet. So I think Cox is probably a little bit overpriced at 560 because of those two 140s. Yep. I sort of thought at the buy we might actually be able to pick him up really cheap because he was having a lot of those lower games. I don't think he's had a rest yet. You'd think that if West Coast stay top two, he might get a rest at some stage.
Yep.
With Lysa playing okay and Naito Nui dominating in the rucks. So the number one selection for me would be Naito Nui out of those three, just because he has just churned out 100, 105 every single week this year. He's been so consistent. His possession count is, he doesn't hardly even touches the ball, but he just wins so many of the taps and
tackles.
That consists. And it's really, like, if, all he has to do is win the ruck work, and he's going to get 100 for most weeks. So, in that sense, at 515,000, if he can stay fit, I'd definitely be taking Naito Nui. Plus, he's awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think you cover most bases there. I think the most exciting thing about if you pick Nick Nat isn't just his fun to watch and exciting to watch on the football field, but from a super coach perspective, Mark, have we seen Naito Nui rip a game apart this year?
We have not. We have in the past, though.
So when once he rips a few games apart, you'd expect his average is going to lift from 105. I personally was predicting that he'd be a 110-plus player at least. So I'm certainly looking for improvement in Nat Nui. And I got to agree with Mark's assessment on Cox. So I have Nat Nui way ahead of Cox, especially at those price points. And just mentioned Jacobs at 460. I always knew he was going to be a good option because of Adelaide's draw and the fact he's number one ruckman. He was the most sort of secure pick in preseason. And the reason I didn't go with him was because he is absolutely useless everywhere except the rucks, and I think his scoring sort of reflects that. Despite people talking about an All-Australian year, giving his ruckman first use all the time, he's averaging only 93. So when people are saying you're in All-Australian form and you're only averaging 93, I don't think you should be brought in into Supercoach side.
Yeah, that's fair. Good points there. He's pretty consistent, but he's not... Like, Naito Nui is consistent, 105, he's consistent, sort of 90. So, yeah, he's just not exciting enough for me either.
Yeah. All right, so that's the rocks done and dusted. Mark, moving on to the forward line. We've got a question from Blair Dewsbury from Twitter. What to do with Zaharakis, Mark? You're facing this problem yourself. So, yeah, we're going to take a look at the options for you. Who are you looking at, Mark?
First of all, I want to express my disappointment at the Essendon Football Club. I'm a supporter. I was at Windy Hill today. But just the fact that Zaharakis injured himself on Wednesday at training in a goal-kicking drill, and then he was named, but he was a late out against Sydney. That's really, really frustrating from a Supercoach perspective because I might have been able to avoid the donut or do something about it. I probably would have picked someone different rather than having to pick those one of the round 11 players. So, yeah, really frustrated. I might have even picked up Beams, who scored 175 last week. So, really frustrated that I've had to deal with that. Zaharakis was a trade-in for me, so that makes it even worse. And he's gone for 4 or 5 weeks, and he said it might even be longer than that. So, as a Bombers fan, we're really going to miss him. We definitely missed him on the weekend. We definitely missed his disposal efficiency going inside to into 50. That was probably our weakest part of the game, where Zaharakis is really, really good at that.
You sort of need one of him or Stanton to sort of get off the leash.
And I think Zaharakis helped Stanton get off the leash because he is that third really good midfielder, whereas now we don't really have that standout. Like, we've still got the midfield depth, but Zaka was definitely a bit of a standout that required a little bit of attention because of his quality going forward. So basically, after all that, I think he's a must trade out. Although with clubs with their injury reports, we said Scotland was a must trade out last week with his 3-week injury, and all of a sudden he's back playing this week apparently. So who can believe the clubs at the moment? It'll be interesting to see what happens with Pendles, given the information we're getting. But yeah, we're looking at around 11 forward. Personally, I think I'm looking at Tippett. I already have Dangerfield. If you don't have Dangerfield, he's really expensive, I imagine. I don't look at his price because I already have him, but what are we looking
590.
At?
590. Yeah.
I think at 590, it's almost like he presents value at that price. Like, seriously, with Adelaide's draw and the way he's been playing, he doesn't seem overpriced at 590, so...
He is overpriced at 590 by about 40K, I reckon, for a 115 average.
He could average more than that on the run home. Like, ridiculous.
he actually could, I guess. He could.
You would hate to pay that much for him, and then he has a couple of low games, but he's probably going to cop a hard tag at some stage. But being a contestant player, he might be able to get through it. So Dangerfield probably would still be my number one option, and the rest of the options look terrible. Gee, you'd almost want to just cop a donut and look at a cloak or someone from next week, wouldn't you? Jesus.
Yeah, and that's the most frustrating thing about Essendon not revealing it earlier. If you got to pick last week, every player still has a bye to go, so you get to pick from all 18 clubs. But now you're forced to, because you've already copped one bye, you're pretty much forced to pick from round 11 players.
We're looking at players like Petrie, Tippett, Walker, Jonathan Brown, Brent Harvey. What is this, 2007?
Yeah. I think that
the Dalhouse, maybe in 3 years.
The two that stand out the most, Mark, another two Adelaide boys. Can you believe that? All three best options, all from Adelaide. I reckon Tippett and Walker.
Yeah, I can believe that, given their draw. Two.
And they're averaging 100 and 98 respectively. Who do you like more out of Tippett and Walker, Mark?
Personally, I like Tippett more. I think that I've been really impressed by his ability to score well in the more difficult games, like the Cats, the Blues, and the Pies. The Hawks. He's sort of got 100 in each of those games, and has the potential to score really big against the weaker opposition. Like he had, I think, 130 odd against Gold Coast earlier this year, and they do have a few of those weaker sides coming up. So, personally, I like Tippett. I can understand why people would like Walker. He's looking at his scoring. It's been, if you take out the 24 he got against Hawthorn, his scoring's been really, really good as well. So I can understand why you'd take either of them. Yeah, what do you think about the two?
Yeah, well, comparing the games that they've both played in, because Walker missed two games for suspension, Walker's scored higher in five of the games and Tippett scored higher in three. I think Tippett seems to have a higher score ceiling because when Adelaide do well, he just seems to be able to kick a bag, more likely to kick a bag than Walker does. But I think Walker's a more consistent player. I personally judge him as a better player. So I do like Walker more, except for the fact that Walker does seem more likely to get suspended than Tippett. And for that very reason, I am leaning toward Tippett over Walker. Do you know his suspension record? Because from memory, it feels like he's just going to get suspended a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure, man. I know Tippett sort of played 18 last year, 22 in each of the year before that. So I think there's a decent chance Tippett will get a rest later in the year, whereas Walker, because he's already had a self-imposed rest, that he's probably less likely. But yeah, you're probably right that Walker is more likely than Tippett to miss games going forward.
Okay, so I guess considering their price is pretty much identical, it's down to personal preference, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, probably who you want to barrack for the rest of the year.
The other player that you mentioned, Mark, Drew Petrie, $470,000, so more expensive than Tippett and Walker. And I guess that rules him out considering he's not been in great form, and they do seem to use Petrie as sort of a... They use him to lead the defenders out of the way because he's clearly their best forward, and that makes room for all their mediums who mark really tall, like Edwards and Thomas, and for their smalls as well.
And how's that working out for him? Not very well.
Not very well.
Yeah, I think Petrie's actually been playing better since McIntosh went down.
Yep.
And because I think he gets more time to sort of go up into the ruck, and that he seems like a player, sort of player that has benefits from getting his hands on the ball. So, but yeah, he's he'd be very frustrating. He's got more low scores in his arsenal. Probably doesn't have quite the upside of the other two in scoring potential, even though at the moment, like over his career, he's been a better player than those two. Norths also don't quite have, they've got decent draw for the rest of the year, but they're not playing awesome, and Adelaide have a fantastic draw. So in that sense, picking an Adelaide key forward seems like a better idea than a North Melbourne key forward.
Yeah, if Petrie were playing for Adelaide, he'd be picked over Tippett and Walker for mine any day of the week, but unfortunately he isn't, and when you're picking a key position forward, the thing you do not want to do, especially do not want to do, is pick outside the top eight. So I think that rules Petrie out for mine. Now, the last few players to look at, Brown, he sort of follows that rule, but he is 50K cheaper, and Brown... Although Petrie is a good player, Brown's an absolute champ, so we sort of have to mention him, but I'm assuming it's a no from both of us, Mark.
Yeah, that's definitely no, just too inconsistent.
And we've got Brent Harvey again from North Melbourne. Still just not consistent enough. If you look at the last...
What's happened to Brent Harvey? Seriously, like round 1 to 3, 91, 137, 106, and then just died in the ass.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much just been falling North Melbourne's form. When you're that old, they can't afford to really carry players, so he sort of gets exposed and he can't really work through a tag anymore. And as we all seen how dangerous Harvey can be, and all coaches know, have many years of experience of how dangerous he can be. So even though he's not playing great football, similar to Kerr, they always seem to put a bit of work into him. So he doesn't seem to get off the chain anymore. And the last one we want to look at is Dalhouse, 390K. Started the season absolutely on fire, but as to be expected from, is he a second or third year player? He's sort of tapered off in recent weeks. I think it's a no from me as well.
Definite no from me, yeah. I think maybe if the Bulldogs were top four, he might be a bit more someone that you'd pick up. And he's an exciting, good player, but probably not Supercoach relevant at the moment.
Okay, so that's it for this week's show, Mark. We've covered all the positions, all the round 11 players, got through a lot. Any advice for round two of the bye season, bye series? Do you have some stress-reducing techniques that you want to share?
Don't watch football. I'm really not sure. Do we pick Gary Ablett as captain again after the 66 on the weekend?
Hopefully Pritis pumps out a 140 and we don't have to worry about it, eh?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I mean, you have to go Ablett again, don't you? Like, I don't know.
What does your vice captain have to score for you to keep it on him and not give Ablett the captaincy?
Gee, after last week, 90? No. Probably, I always look at like 130 or up.
They play North, who don't have any name taggers, if I'm not mistaken. Although Jones didn't even go to Ablett, did he, against Saints?
No, he went to Benell, I thought, for a while, yeah. But he might have ended up on Ablett. I'm not sure. I sort of missed the second half of that game. Yeah, I honestly got to the end of the weekend and thought, gee, my score's horrible. I'm going to go so far down in ranking this week. I've had three unforced donuts just from players being out. I was a bit shattered, but then my ranking went up. So don't panic no matter what your score is, would be my advice this week.
Yeah, and mine would be pretty similar to last week's. If you haven't listened to it yet, still applicable for the bye series. And just, chill out, because everybody's going through the same crap and no point stressing too much about it. In the end, it's still a game, and it's what I remind myself. I found myself watching the scores less and watching the football a bit more, so that's a bit of a change. Maybe try and enjoy that. But best of luck for the upcoming round, guys. Best of luck with the trades. Hopefully you get some nice buy-dodging upgrades in there, and hopefully you'll get a push up the rankings. I certainly am hoping for a crack into the top 500 this week, Mark.
Yeah, you think everyone will do three trades this week?
Probably not. I think a lot of people loaded up on round 13 players or ended up with GWS players that have stayed in their side because they've had to deal with like a Horsley a week earlier or something like that.
Sure, I think a lot of teams that I know will be looking at three trades this week, though. One thing we didn't touch on, sorry, I know we're just wrapping up the show, but I do want to just talk about Sam Shaw briefly from Adelaide.
Oh, yeah.
If you are looking for a rookie this week, he's probably the one you should be looking at. If he can stay fit, he did have a hamstring injury earlier in the season, but he does seem like Sanderson likes him, and he's best 22 at Adelaide, has good scoring potential. So, if you do need a rookie this week, he's probably the one.
Good memory,
and
Mark.
Good luck.
Really missed out on that one. All right. Best of luck for the upcoming round.
See ya. Yeah.